Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
This month's book is Palace Rogue by William Coles. Palace Rogue is the tale of Kim, a newspaper reporter who obtains a post as a footman at Buckingham Palace. He works his way into the affections of both many of the other staff, as well as one prominent member of the royal family. But he is actually there to collect as much information and gossip as he can. This is fed back to his editors and is published in The Sun, much to the alarm of all at the palace. Running parallel with this is a romance between Campion, one of the maids, and Mason, the Queen's newly appointed equerry. Both tales have some tension. The constant danger of Kim's true role being discovered, and the bumpy road travelled by Campion and Mason as they become closer, much to the fury of Mason's mother, the vile Viola, Duchess of Montague.
Seeing as it was my first day at Buckingham Palace, I decided to follow Ollie's lead. For lunch, our spaghetti bolognese was washed down with kettle gin and lime cordial, and we continued to tipple on the gin as Ollie showed me how to lay up in one of the staff dining rooms. I'd never seen such a palaver, but such was life at the palace, where staff measured their worth by how their meals were served and how much time had been spent on laying out their dining tables. Buckingham Palace had several staff dining rooms, each of them just a little more luxurious. Along with the staff bedrooms, it was these dining rooms that reflected where a staff member stood in the palace pecking order. Right at the bottom, obviously, were the footmen, the maids, the craftsmen, and the carpenters. We all had our meals in the self-service canteen on the ground floor, with its plastic seats and lino floor, raucous, loud with laughter, just like any other work canteen. The next rung up the staff ladder was the steward's dining room, which was for the pages, yeomen, and anyone who'd served 20 or more years at the palace. It had carpets and comfy upholstered chairs, and its members were treated to a selection of breads, cheeses, and crackers. Next up was the official's dining room for the personal secretaries, clerks, and press officers. Another dining room, Lady Barrington's room, was where the master of the household would sip a pre-prandial with the chief housekeeper and the paymaster, and where fine wines and vintage brandies were served with the meals. Then, right at the very top of the tree, was the dining room next to the bow room, complete with royal collection portraits and Chippendale furniture. Here dined the ladies-in-waiting, the mistress of the robes, the queen's chaplain, the lord chamberlain, and the equerries-in-waiting. It was in this dining room that I would cut my teeth as a palace waiter. It was terribly stiff, as if all of them were terrified that their poor table manners would give the game away. The only genuine laughter I heard in the room was from Ollie as he showed me the ropes. There was a long rectangular table, and we'd already laid out a fresh white linen tablecloth. While I polished the silver cutlery to a high sheen, Ollie was doing some basic maths in a little booklet that had been set aside for the purpose. "My C-grade GCSE finally comes into its own," he said. "We've got 18 people dining here tonight, one at each end, so that'll be 8 down each side. Now for the clever bit. The table is currently 7 metres long, so we divide that by 8 to give us the magic number, which is," he fiddled around with his pencil, "87.5. "Eureka," I said, trying to get into the spirit of things.
One thread of Palace Rogue is based on true events, the widely reported escapade of Mirror reporter Ryan Perry, who won the Scoop of the Year award for his reports. Told in the first person, this runs through the book, tying the whole story together and giving the rogue of the title a voice. Despite some of his actions, drinking the royal gin, sneaking onto the balcony at the front of the palace and unwittingly causing the death of a much-loved retainer, for example, Kim presents as the archetypical, lovable rogue. His sense of humour and different demeanour set him apart from most of the servants, but this is intriguing rather than irritating for some of the most senior members of the family, and he quickly gains enough favour to be confirmed in post. Palace Rogue is difficult to place in an established genre, although it is based on a premise that can perhaps be described as jaw-dropping. It is at heart a true story, and Coles provides some references and photographs to prove this. It is more than faction, however, as a number of events are compressed in time, and the love story that gives Palace Rogue its heart is either very well disguised or a most pleasant fiction. Coles is sparing in the number of royal residents he includes in his story, and is generally respectful without being servile. There is, however, one notable exception in the much despised Prince Grumpling, who comes over as utterly vile, entitled, and stupid. Even some of the worst characters in Mr. Twobomb did not merit this sort of depiction.
The Queen has dealt with a lot of death in her life. So after Bobo's death, she does what she did when her father, George VI, died. She seeks solace with her horses in the stables, grooming them with heavy brushes until their coats gleam. Nothing but her and the horse, one hand on its flank and one hand on the brush. She occasionally rests her head against the horse's side, cocooned by the warm wall of solid muscle. She first started grooming horses on the death of her grandfather, George V, but those had just been her little toy ponies. She'd brushed the manes and the tails so often that the horsehair had started to fall out, and the wooden toys had to be sent away for repair. Then, 17 years later, when her father died, she'd sought the same solace in the palace mews. As she'd once told her daughter Anne, "You can't feel properly sad when you're grooming a horse. Very sad when you're grooming yourself, but it is impossible to be sad when you're grooming a horse. Inside you may be in knots, but you still have to wield the brush. You still have to have one reassuring hand on the horse's flank." The death of her father, when she'd been staying with Philip at Treetops in Kenya, had been a hammer blow. She'd allowed herself just 2 hours to process her father's sudden death, and then, well, it had been back to business, though upgraded to being the Queen's business. The same day that she'd heard the news, she'd been back at her desk, perusing all those top-secret documents that had been for the monarch's eyes only. Her sister Margaret went to pieces when their father, Bertie, died, spending days and days in a darkened room where she did little more than polish her collection of seashells. They were a very nice collection of seashells, lots of shells that Margaret had collected from her trips to the world's finest beaches, but polishing them did seem like a rather banal occupation. In 1947, when the Queen made her first speech to the Commonwealth, she had set out her life's purpose, and every day after, she remembered that pledge. She recalled it when her father died, and now, as she grooms the horses, she repeats her promise. "It is very simple," she says. "And in this moment, it is very simple because you brush the horse's flank, mane and tail, and you keep on brushing until its hair gleams like burnished copper. With long, smooth strokes down the horse's forelegs, she continues her chant. I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and the service of our great imperial family, to which we all belong."
William Coles spent many years working as a reporter for The Sun, and so his descriptions of the offices and other staff are vivid and believable, if a little extreme in places. Describing himself as a reformed journalist, he has published a wide range of books covering subjects ranging from the bombing of Japan in World War II to the mystery surrounding Lord Lucan's disappearance. The former, a previous book of the month, is a far more serious book telling the story of one of the few people to survive both atomic bombs in 1945. On the surface, it would seem to have little in common with a light-hearted and downright mischievous book like Palace Rogue. Both, however, are rooted in real life. Both have flawed but increasingly endearing protagonists, and both contain a moral message. They are also well-written, well-paced, and compelling reads. I admit I have my doubts about this book, despite this admiration for Mr. Twobomb. but in the end, I enjoyed it enormously.
Well, there we are. Interesting thoughts from Jenny Finch, of course, on William Coles' latest part of a duology, of course, because the next in the Palace Rogue series will be coming our way very shortly. He's currently been spending his time actually learning how to be a tennis umpire. Who knows whether he's actually going to be exploring the joys of being an umpire in tennis as well. But Rob Nichols, what did you make of William Coles' latest offering, again, as a former Sun journalist, clearly writing about the Daily Mirror, which surely is a bizarre connection, but you know, it all fits together.
It does all fit together, and as Jenny said, yeah, there is the link to Mr. Two Bob in the fact that he takes a true story and writes a kind of his account of what, you know, filling in the gaps between what we know and what's been published. I'd much rather read Mr. Tubom, which I feel is a phenomenal story that everyone should read. But I bet far more people will will look at this story than Mr. Tubom. And I'm not sure what that says about the society we're in or what. But yeah, but for me, the subject matters they couldn't be more contrasting, and I much prefer the story from Japan.
I mean, certainly the whole way in which the narrative proceeds here, even the line about the teddy bears that need to be arranged in the exactly the precise order by which again I believe, as far as I know, is actually a true story. They actually went ballistic when the teddy bears weren't actually arranged in particular order from that point of view. It kind of shows some of the, in a real sense, that insight into royalty that maybe is what the tabloids feed on, that actually this feeding frenzy, which is why obviously putting a reporter undercover as a footman in the palace to actually dig the stories within that would have been seen as yeah, absolutely a sort of ideal opportunity to work through that that process. What about the characters in general? I mean, did you feel that any of them resonated with yourself, or did you kind of feel as though even Kim himself was sometimes we thought, where's he going with respect to this, really?
Yeah, I thought Campion was phenomenal. And I thought she was such a rounded character because she would keep her cool, but she'd also lose her head when she, you know, she knew just how much to stand up to authority, and she wasn't going to take any stick. And it was great the way that he gradually revealed more about Campion, in the fact that, for instance, you just knew she was a woman and that she maybe came from humble backgrounds at first, but then you didn't realise until, I think it was probably until Viola clashed with her, that she was black. And I like the way that they treated that. And well, there's some great characters really amongst the palace staff, and a lot of yeah, some great humorous parts to it. And yes, I think he's on safe ground with Prince Andrew, don't you? Because you know, the passage of time, I think that's the least of Andrew's worries, that we think that he's totally mad with his teddy bears, but it just sort of, yeah, we know a lot more about him now, and we feel that there's a lot more that should and could come out.
Well, exactly. I mean, OCD when it comes to your plushy friends, that's another issue for another time, perhaps. But that's an interesting one. I have to say, it's interesting how you define it as a character, but I felt the portrayal of Her Majesty the Queen, the late Queen, of course, when she was basically coping with the death of her father and grooming the horses and working through that process. That's some part of the excerpt that we actually used for the second reading. I think that actually worked well. And I think, once again, we kind of have that echo that, you know, nobody could find anything really untoward about Elizabeth Windsor. But it was obviously other members of her family that kind of create issues, which also connected with something else I've been reviewing recently, which is Philippa Gregory's work. Philippa Gregory, obviously a historical fictional writer who effectively produced work on the White Queen and the Spanish Princess and the White Princess, all of which kind of goes back to the War of the Roses, the battles between the Houses of York and the Houses of Lancaster. And actually, apart from the killings, there's very little change in many ways in how royalty is actually operating within itself. This is obviously a humorous book, but you've actually got that situation whereby, as opposed to going to war and battling the whole things, there are clearly households that are at war. And as in the case of Duchess Viola, there's a kind of classic way in which the whole essence of the manipulation is there. And I think that's a key word, which for me, I think William Coles manages to address, but not necessarily in a way which kind of takes away from the narrative. It's all about people being manipulated. We've got the newspaper people who are doing the manipulations and actually wanting to manipulate the story so that their newspaper sales are increased. You've got the many and varied manipulations on the layers of the palace. You know, which dining room do you actually get to actually eat with? Is it on the plain floor without? Is it the plush carpet one? How do you actually see yourself going through those things? Which some might say is at the root of some of the challenges we have within Britain, although maybe some of the historical aspects of Britain, this kind of role of deference and this role of hierarchies and so on. I mean, again, it's interesting. I mean, I don't think William Coles is looking to actually go down the line of Philip Gregory, but or indeed person who was the creator of Wolf Hall, Hilary Mantel. But I think in terms of that whole side of things, it's an interesting sort of interconnection within that. I mean, as a historian, Rob, and obviously this is very, very recent history that William's coping with. I mean, it's literally was. I mean, having said that, I know some of my students who would say, but it's in the 90s. That's such a long, long time ago. That was last century. But how do you feel that that kind of notion of faction, as Jenny refers to it, really comes across?
Yeah, it's interesting that he's developed that as a kind of genre, hasn't he? And I recently read a book about the soldier that was left, the soldier that the Japanese soldier that thought the war was still going on in that remote island, and that again is written from the point of view of somebody piecing together what he might have been thinking, what he might have been doing through time. And I think it's a really good way of it's a really valuable way of tackling these sort of subjects. I take your point what you're saying about the different aspects here that we got a couple of insights into the Queen, whether it's completely fictional or not, that she the a mischievous nature, wanting to go in a mask where nobody knew who she was, although she presumably probably did stand out rather more than she thought. But is that based on anything, or is it you don't know, do you really? And also wanting to listen to Campion's stories about the paintings, which again was quite sort of endearing, wasn't it? I'm not sure whether either of them say anything about the history, but we don't get to see anything. We don't get to see anything about the job, do we? Actually, about their role. We get to see that the footmen and everything bringing in the ambassadors or whatever, but I don't think we get to see much about the actual business, if there is any business that goes on. But we'd be quite alarmed if Prince Andrew at that time, he did have a role, didn't he? He was supposed to be like an ambassador, a business ambassador. It's quite alarming to think that we were relying on him in some way when his mind was clearly thinking about his teddy bears on his bed.
But then, given the prime ministers that we've had since then, arguably it sort of just set the scene for life in the 21st century. We've had quite an interesting discourse there, and I'm aware that Jenny probably hasn't picked up on most of it because she's been dipping in, dipping out, and so on. Jenny, we're coming back to your good self. I mean, I was just talking about how in this particular area, although I wouldn't say that William Coles is looking to actually go down the line of the Hilary Mantel or Philippa Gregory route, it is interesting that sort of approach that he's taken to, as you said, developing this historical faction.
Yes, it is. Yes, I'm sorry about dipping in and out. We've got very strong winds here, and I think they blew the signal away completely. Can you hear me?
Absolutely. Don't worry. It's all fine. And the listeners, she or he or they would never have even known you've actually been gone, because Rob and myself filled in expertly from that point of view. So carry on.
Absolutely. Yes. I think he's did it magnificently with Mr. Tubom. This is very interesting, this one. I mean, there's some nice little bombs in there that are probably going to go off at some point. Might be interesting to see what he's actually going to do with the next one. He could go through life picking out bits of experiences and weaving them into really thoroughly enjoyable and occasionally extremely thought-provoking novels. I think it's a wonderful niche he's carved out for himself. Go for it.
Yeah, there are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments, which I think are sort of well put together. And thumbs up for, from that perspective. Okay, let's go to scores. I mean, we will probably also feed in some of the other thoughts and views of some of the other readers of this particular text. But Robert, what are you going to go for your particular score for Palace Rogue?
Yeah, I think it's much, as a faction, it's much less damaging than perhaps the sort of TV exposés that have been shown more recently, which people seem to believe as being gospel truth. And we should also say that it'd be very interesting to know if someone was to be a fly on the wall in Charles's Buckingham Palace, what we would see that was in common, or whether we would see a lot of differences. But in saying all that, the score, I'm going for 7.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, Jenny.
I'm going to give it 7.5. I like the way he wove the two stories together. And as you say, there are some laugh out loud moments. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I think I might even sort of just ramp it up another 0.5 to go to an 8 out of 10, because for me, it did actually work well. I hadn't expected to enjoy it, I have to be honest. My kind of, although I never revealed this to William, he'll know it now if he's listening to this. My sort of inner self kind of groaned. I thought, oh, not another book, which is actually about royalty and so on. But I think the way he actually coped with this, the way he actually wove it together, and the way in which actually he kind of managed to demonstrate that particular form of journalism and investigative journalism about a lifestyle issue, of course, certainly comes across as infinitely more entertaining than a certain book called Spare, which of course you may well be familiar with, Harry having produced it from that point of view. And I think Spare Part 2 is coming up very shortly, or is that going to be another line? So I think it's an 8 out of 10 for me. But for the moment, from Rob Nichols and of course Jenny Finch, huge thanks. The next book of the month we will be announcing fairly shortly, I believe.
That's right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And keep on reading.
Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com. Probably the best download decision you'll ever make.